so patronizing as well, like to yourself.
It's just you and me. Yeah, it's to myself. To my, yeah, absolutely to
yeah,
myself.
Yeah, it's like yeah, I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I know, but this podcast.
Yeah, there's a podcast. We all know what the deal is. But for the listeners, I am here in Queensland at my parents' house, and my guest today is stand-up comedian, educator.
Thank you.
Thank you. Meg Yeager.
Thank you.
Comedy darling. Raw runner-up.
Runner-up.
Raw National Raw Comedy runner-up 2021.
Three. 2023. This
2023.
Year.
2023. Oh, shit.
It was this year.
It's been
yeah,
a long fucking year.
Yeah. It does feel like it's still 2021.
Yeah. I got no sense of time after lockdowns. It's crazy.
No,
yeah,
me either. And I choose to not have a sense of time.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, when someone like gives me a date, like, oh, what are you doing on the 17th of
hey,
January?
I really need this thing by the 17th of January.
I'm just like, do you know none of this is real?
This is what you're saying.
What
you're
the
saying, nothing is real.
Fuck are you talking about?
You're a paramedic? Shut up.
Yeah. We're not in a hospital. A baby's not being born on the 17th of January
it's
in
paperwork.
Our circle. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah.
Well, it's thank you so much for making time and coming on. I feel like at this stage of the podcast, everyone's just doing me a favor. By
right.
On, so I appreciate it. It's good.
You're doing me a favor. Yeah. I'm on school holidays because I'm a teacher, not a student. I have nothing on.
Teacher, not a student. You got nothing on.
I've got nothing on.
Oh, well. That's
yeah,
nice. That sounds nice.
So even if
I got
you were
so
like,
much on.
So must
much
be
on.
Nice, Ryan. Even if you were like, do you want to hang out at my parents' house? I would be like, yeah.
Do you want to come over and watch the SBS Irish drama Kin with me?
Yeah, I would say yes. I'd be like, yeah, I've got nothing on.
That's my new show, is Kin.
If really?
Yeah, that's a hot tip for everyone listening. It's an Irish mafia, drug cartel
that's
drama.
So yeah, my thing.
It's very good. It's very good.
God, I love those stupid accents they put on.
Yeah, well, they're all Irish. They're all, I think.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I have a working theory that all Irish people are just putting that on. I'm like, why are you talking like that? That's the dumbest accent I've ever heard, but don't stop doing it.
That's so funny. Yeah, well, before we jump in, do you want to plug anything? You got festival shows this year, right?
Yes, I do.
Yes?
I do. One I'm not allowed to share yet. Even
right,
though, I don't care. But one...
This will come out next year. This will come out in January. A couple weeks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then for Melbourne International Comedy Festival, I will be doing Comedy Zone.
Go see Meg at Comedy Zone.
Yes. And four other comedians.
Who aren't as funny as me.
It's so
just
true.
Just making enemies off the bat. Just being a bitch.
Yes.
Like, you haven't even met them yet.
Haven't even met them, but I assume they're fine.
Probably all white men edgelord.
And that's my thing. yes, I'm doing that. She'll be very fun.
Yep.
And then is Sydney Comedy Festival. I'm doing my history game show, Wrong Answers Only.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I forget the date, to be honest.
That's all right. Just follow Meg. Find her on social media. It's
exactly.
Good.
That's yeah, where I am.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, again, thank you for coming on. Today, we're talking about the 1988 album, Suffer. By Bad Religion.
I was there.
You were there? Were you born in 98?
Nah.
No, you weren't.
I was not born in 88. I wasn't even born in the 80s.
I was... I fucking hate this podcast so much. I just hate comedy. Everyone's so young.
Can't help it.
Yeah. I was three.
Right.
I was three. 88 in my memory. Because I started making memories. It was Muppet Show.
Oh, of course.
It was the Muppet Show. I think mm-hmm, that's all I remember.
Yeah.
The Muppet Show. My parents would tape the Muppet Show for me.
Yeah.
I just watch them. I love Kermit.
Yeah.
Shout out to a real one, Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, he's so nice.
Fozzie Bear, greatest comedian of all time.
I agree. I think it's controversial, but I agree.
Even after the allegations. Even, he can't, he's undeniable.
I'm sorry, but he just says what we're all thinking.
Yeah. So 88. What did you, I mean, I'll get into the history of it, but like, what were your first impressions when I forced you to listen to this? This punk rock album from 1988.
I was like, God, it's so nice to hear from a friend, first of all. no, I like generally, I'm pretty like non-denominational when it comes to music.
You're secular. You're
yeah,
a secular music fan. That's
I'm a
good,
secular music fan. So when people are like, you should listen to this, I generally always do.
Cool.
unless it's like people screaming, because I have really bad hearing, so I can't listen.
Oh, really?
I can't listen to screamo music. That's the only genre.
Why do you have bad hearing?
I think it's like, it must be genetic, because my dad is completely deaf in one ear.
Okay, yeah.
But also, I think I just like listened to loud music a lot as a kid.
Oh, man.
And I ruined myself.
Yeah. I've got hearing damage as well, but it's from literally playing in hardcore bands for half my life.
What are you to do? Be a virgin?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Have no fun?
Yeah. I can't help it. But yeah. Yeah, I was excited to listen to it because it's not like my go-to. And honestly, the music I've been listening to for the past 3 years is just like what is saved on my Spotify.
Sure.
So yeah. I don't think I've listened to anything new.
Yeah.
Since like I only listen to new things when like Boy Genius releases new albums.
Great.
And I'm like, oh fuck, I know this band.
Ah, something familiar. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But as a young woman in her 20s, like, did it feel old? Did it feel dated to you, or did it just
it felt nostalgic? Because I have like much older brothers,
and
so like growing up, my introduction to music was like Serge Tankian, like Rage Against the Machine, and Green Day, so it felt very nostalgic. It felt like I was in my brother's bedroom when he was forced to babysit me when he was 16, and he was like, I'm pretty sure this music doesn't have swears in it, but I'm not changing it if it does.
Cool. Nice. That was the threshold for it.
Yes, like, and very like, so politically charged.
Always politically charged. Yeah. Man, the 90s were just, it was crazy.
And I remember like my brother Alex, he would, especially with like Serge Tankian, he would like tell me the meaning of this, like, you know, like Children at War, and I would be like, I don't know what any of these words mean, but I'm angry.
I'm so angry. Do you feel like listening to your brother's music, because you're a teacher now, did that influence you like politically or like socially?
I think
socially?
It did. Yeah, I think it did, because by the time I got to high school, I knew about Iraq.
Yeah.
I knew about all these things and like my pleb friends didn't.
Yeah.
And I was like, wake up, you guys. Yeah. We're 12 years old. What have you been listening to this whole time?
That's so funny, because like the reason, I mean, I went like, I'm guessing I'm like, this is a bit later, sort of towards the end of high school, but the reason I went vegan was because of a punk band called Goldfinger.
Really?
Yeah, like punk ska, pop punk, but I don't know, a little bit. Edgier than just like your standard pop punk, but like they were big vegan activist band, and they were another. When you talk about your brother's taste in music, it makes me think like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater soundtrack. They were on that. They had a song on the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and stuff. But yeah, I was obsessed with Goldfinger, and went vegan because of them punk rock. Yeah, it's so funny when you see like older, like your parents, like boomer parents, kind of being like, "Oh, it's corrupting the youth." It's like, I didn't drink.
Yeah.
I didn't eat any meat. Like, you know, like.
Yeah.
This is all the influence of punk rock. I was a fucking nerd. Because
I know.
Of, like,
yeah. Yeah, my brother's the same. He still does not drink. Yeah. He's never had a drop of alcohol in his life. Yeah. And he's like 33 now.
Yeah.
Because, I think it was definitely the influence
of
music.
Like the straight edge stuff. Yeah. Even if you're not straight edge, like, I think a lot of people make the choice just not to drink because.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, Bad Religion. So you don't remember your brother showing you Bad Religion specifically?
I don't believe so.
Because they're just such a big...
Yes.
Like, after 40 years of being a band, they're like huge. It's like unavoidable, I think, in some circles anyway. Like, but they've got music videos, they do chart, like their albums chart, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So in terms of punk rock, as big as punk rock can get, like they're definitely up there, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I remember them specifically, but yeah, it definitely sounded familiar. I think all those bands just merged together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. They definitely do a bit. Like if you're not actually like a nerd about it and like, oh, I love this album, It's just like, oh yeah, those bands. Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I've had feedback on the podcast. I've been told that I have
to go... I hate to hear that.
I thrive under scrutiny.
You're literally perfect, Ryan.
Thank you, man.
I think you should reject it.
Well, let's just chat in that case. Fuck the podcast. Let's just talk about how good each of us are. I've been told I need to give it a bit more of like a dollop kind of intro. I need to give you a bit more history, or give the listener a bit more history for people who aren't actually familiar with Bad Religion. Mm-hmm. So I've got some notes. I'm going to read off my notes.
Excellent.
So yeah, like they're huge, and like they basically... I guess like a good starting point is the guitarist, Brett Gerowitz. Mm-hmm. He started the punk rock label Epitaph.
Right.
I don't know if you know Epitaph, but
no, I have.
Yeah, it's they're an independent label, but they've been like a springboard for some of the biggest, like Offspring.
Yeah.
Were Epitaph. Shit. Yeah, yeah. The band Every Time I Die, they were Epitaph. Like, yeah, just like big punk adjacent bands from all the sort of subgenres, like Epitaph, like Converge as well. They're one of my favorite bands. They're like an extreme sort of hardcore metalcore band. Like, yeah, yeah. So he was the original guitarist in Bad Religion. And these guys, like him and the singer Greg Graffin, they're just they're figureheads because they're old men now. Right. So they're just like the forefathers of this whole sort of style of music. and they were a major label band. Like they signed to Atlantic in 1993. And that's what I mean when I'm like, yeah, they have music videos, they're on MTV, all this sort of stuff. They achieved like mainstream popularity.
Yeah.
Like it's all relative, you know, like they weren't fucking Destiny's Child, but like as far as
who
like
is?
who could be.
Exactly.
But yeah, in terms of like that subculture, like they were huge.
Yeah.
And they still are. Like that, and that's the thing for me is like they were just one of those bands that was just always there.
Mm.
And like growing up, I'm like, oh yeah, I like that song, I like that song, but I never really engaged with any of the albums until prepping for this podcast.
Yeah.
But when I was playing in hardcore bands, and like categorically not punk bands, but like hardcore bands, the older guys I was playing with, especially the people who like played guitar, they swore by the early Bad Religion albums, which was interesting for me because I was like, oh, but that's punk, that's not hardcore. And there was like this really sort of clear delineation in my mind about what was cool and what wasn't, and like I'd kind of left punk rock behind and I was into hardcore now. Yeah. But like everyone who gets into hardcore is a punk rock kid to start with anyway. So it's kind of like I felt like I had to leave that part of myself behind and be a hardcore kid. But it's like, no, it's just like these albums are like so important sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You need they're like Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, if you will.
Yeah.
You need to read the gospel for...
I forgot you were a church kid.
Yeah, I was.
You got to read the Old Testament to understand the joy of the New Testament.
Exactly, to understand Jesus coming.
You need the fire and brimstone to understand the love and forgiveness.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I believe so.
Do you still go to church? No. No, you're not religious anymore?
I would say I'm like severely agnostic.
on set agnosticism.
If God's real, I'd be like, that's awesome.
Right.
But if he's not, I would be like, doesn't change anything.
So how do you feel about like the hardline, like anti-Christian sentiments of a band literally called Bad Religion? It's so funny that their logo is a cross with a cross with the nose. It's like, no.
Yeah. I think like, I'm pro like spirituality, and I do love like the organization that like, oh, sorry to like quote Jordan Peterson, I literally hate myself for this, but there is like some truth in like you need some order to the chaos. Mm. And when I was in church, I went to a pretty like unproblematic church.
You need to make your bed.
Yeah, you need to make your bed.
And you need to read Jordan Peterson to understand.
That's what I'm saying. These snowflakes don't understand me. But like for me, like the church I went to was pretty progressive. Like, you know, like they were pretty pro gay people. God forbid.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. Yeah, it was like pretty progressive. Like it was mainly just about like, you know, having a relationship with a higher power. Yeah, so I liked the order that it had to my like early 20s life, and it basically taught me to meditate.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And so
through prayer,
because like when I think about it retrospectively, I'm like, oh, I was meditating, but because I didn't know how to meditate when I was, you know, 20, I was like speaking to somebody.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So I am like pro that aspect of it, but I'm very anti, you know, like, oh, because of an historical text that was written over 2000 years ago by multiple different sources who may or may not have seen something specific. I would hate if gay people got married, or like, I would hate if a woman got an abortion. And especially because, like, you know, I'm first and foremost an historian, as you know.
I do know that about you.
You do know this. Yeah, what I hate about it, it's like with all religious theological texts, is that like they've been interpreted so many different times. So like the Bible, for example,
well, it's like the, well, you could say the same thing about like the American Constitution.
Yes,
people cling to these things, but it's like, what about the context?
Yes, you know? Context is everything. And also, the Bible was first written in Greek, and when it was first translated, it was literally like, you know how in the English one, it's like, in the beginning, God created the sun, the universe, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah.
Once upon a time.
Yeah. But in the Greek version, it's literally like three words. And it's like, in beginning, God. And that's it. That's the whole chapter. And I'm like, really? Yeah. I like straight
in beginning,
to the point.
God is all right, actually.
Yeah. It's like straight to the point.
That's a big bang.
It's a big bang.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, I think we've just like.
We are so in sync.
I've always said this, Ryan. I've literally always said this.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, right. Interesting.
Yeah. So, sorry, long-winded way of saying.
No, this is part of it. I want to. Oh, okay. I want them to know who you are.
Like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. Thank God.
Whoever she is.
Yeah. I would go down on God for hours just because that's how much I respect women.
Yeah.
I want to eat God's pussy.
Someone's got to.
Someone has to. She deserves it. And look, this is just an interesting fact that I learned doing my research. But like after they signed to Atlantic, that guitarist, Brett Gerowitz, who started Epitaph, he left. He's had like heroin issues like on and off like his whole life.
Right.
But this is in the 90s when they were sort of becoming big, or selling out, as some people might say. Mm. But this is more to drive home like the hardcore lineage that the band has, even though they're a big punk rock band now, like a stadium punk rock band. But like in the early 90s when Gerowitz left, he was replaced by the guitarist from Minor Threat, Brian Baker.
Oh, okay.
Who are a seminal hardcore band from the 80s, basically. And even more interesting than that, Brian Baker, the guy who joined, he turned down a spot in REM.
Whoa.
To play in Bad Religion.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. I just thought that was an interesting fact. Like, it doesn't really have too much relevance, but
Wow.
So I'm just going through the like sort of the mainstream history of the band before we talk about the actual album Suffer. In 2000, pre-9/11, what a time. When were you born?
I'm 97.
Okay, you were alive for... Do you have memories of 9/11 as a baby?
I just know, like, that was a time... I didn't live with my whole family for very long, only the first 5 years of my life. But okay. I just remember it was a rare moment where everybody was home.
Oh,
like
right.
My two brothers, both of my parents.
It's like a fond memory for you.
Literally.
It's like, oh, everyone's here.
Like when I think back, there was something about that day. I think my brothers were like playing a game with me. And I brought it up like years ago. I'm like, what was happening? Like, why were we all home? That was like literally awesome for me. And my mom was like, oh, that was 9/11.
That was an international terrorist attack that changed the future of the world forever.
I'm sorry, but that made me bond with my family. I was so... No one was ever home to hang out with me.
Yeah, right. That's so funny. Well, in 2000, before this beautiful moment you had watching the towers fall, they did... So this is like kind of a personal thing for me. So it's interesting. In 2000, they did a US tour, a stadium tour with Blink-182.
Cool.
And they were supporting Blink-182. This is 2000, like Blink-182 were at the height,
yeah.
You know? And the reason that's interesting is because when Blink-182 toured Australia in 2013, so, you know, nearly 15 years later, Travis Barker didn't come because he was scared of flying. He'd been in the plane crash.
Yeah, I remember this.
And they toured with Bad Religion's drummer.
Oh.
Yeah, Brooks.
Yeah.
And he was the only one who hung out.
Aww.
So Tom DeLonge and Mark Hoppus stayed in their separate trailers.
Yeah.
Didn't talk to anyone, didn't talk to each other. But Brooks was like hanging out, drinking beers, just with the crew and everyone. Yeah. And
that's
he was a cool guy. So yeah.
That's really cool.
That's my little claim to fame. I met the drummer of one of the drummers, one of the many drummers of Bad Religion. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
But Yeah, in terms of like their legacy, I guess, there's big bands who just are indebted to what Bad Religion did. So like Green Day, just all the Southern California kind of punk scene, like in the 90s, spurted from this album specifically, from Suffer. So yeah, like Green Day, The Offspring, NoFX, Pennywise, Rancid, Hot Water Music. Those are the big ones to kind of like give an idea of just how influential this album was.
Right.
Because it kind of, everyone, like Fat Mike from NoFX. Are you familiar with NoFX?
No.
No? Your brothers didn't get into NoFX?
They probably did, but I don't.
They're just, again, just another one of the biggest punk bands. They're touring Australia at the moment because they're all old. This is like their final tour.
Yeah.
They're all old men. It's so funny.
I love those tours.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the last one. But yeah, Fat Mike, who's the singer of NoFX, he called Suffer the record that changed everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So back in 1988 now when the record came out. And so just for these kids who were in the punk scene, it was like, it just like, again, just one of those records that changed the direction of everything. And I think like also like I'm talking a lot about like the actual punk bands that took that sound and like ran with it. But I think in the hardcore scene as well, like the sound is pretty prevalent. Like I know these names may not mean much to you, but for people listening, I really think that Bad Religion had a huge influence on the sound of bands like Ignite, Boy Sets Fire. Those are the two main ones that come to mind. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, because there is this like, H2O, they're a big band. Because there is this kind of like movement of like very melodic hardcore bands. Mm. Yeah. And I think Bad Religion have a lot to answer to for that. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I think the reason it was such a big deal is because it was their third album in 1988. But it was like their comeback. Like they, for all intents and purposes, they'd broken up.
Really?
Yeah, they had two records and then the second one was like a prog rock record in like, I think like 83 or 84 or something.
Yep.
83, called Into the Unknown.
Mm. I love like, Frozen.
They were trying to do like prog rock. I've got a quote here from Zach Smith from Decibel magazine, which says, if Bad Religion had never made another record after 1983's Into the Unknown, it's doubtful that those familiar with the band at the time would have been surprised because it was such a flop.
Yeah.
So like they had this great first album, just like fast punk, and then they did this weird keyboard record.
Yeah.
And then Gerowitz was on heroin, like it just kind of fell apart until like a few years later. my sweet lovely girlfriend is locked out. I have to let her in.
Oh, no.
I'm not editing. We're not editing that. This is punk rock, baby.
Yeah.
And so basically the singer, Greg Graffin, after a few years, he was like, no, I want to do it. I want to play live shows. And apparently like in California, They were playing these shows and everyone was coming out and they had this they had a replacement guitarist while Gerowitz was kind of in rehab or whatever he was doing, who used to play in the Circle Jerks, which are another just big old 80s hardcore band. They had a gig and they needed a fill-in guitarist, so they called up Gerowitz, who was, you know, probably on the nod or whatever. And they're like, hey, our current guitarist can't play. Do you want to come back? And he was like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I should, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And they convinced him and it was a great gig. And then they decided to continue being a band.
Wow.
Like they basically got back together with the original lineup and they recorded this third album.
Is he still alive?
He is still alive.
He's still alive.
Yep.
Is he still...
I think he only relapsed once from what I could find in, I think in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Oh, no, in the 90s, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
He
relapsed. That's when he left the band again and he was calling them sellouts and...
Right.
Yeah, because they signed to a major label and everything. Yeah.
I feel like men who are heroin addicts and relapse, like, they sound like me in my luteal phase.
What's luteal?
So, okay, I'm going to talk to you about female anatomy. Okay, so assigned female at birth people have periods, Ryan.
Okay.
And so 3 weeks of the month, we're
wait, hold up. Rewind. No, yeah, go on.
3 weeks of the month, we are in like a phase of our period. So there's only 1 week dedicated to bleeding. And then there's like another week where you're just like angry. And then there's another week where you're sad. Basically, okay. Like your hormones are just so out of whack.
And this is why women can't be the president.
That's what I've been saying this whole time. And so, yeah, depending on where I am in that phase, I just say like whacked out things. Okay. Like I've threatened to quit comedy so many times.
While you've been in your lunar phase.
In my phase. and I've said like the craziest shit. Like
I'm not quitting. I was just on the menses.
I literally, every time, like Felix, the sound guy of Sit Down Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. One time, friend of the pod. One time I like rocked up to a sit down gig and I was like, this is my last gig ever. I just want to let you know I'm fucking sick of this shit.
Yeah, right.
Nothing happened to me that day. I was just decided. And he literally said, he was like, have you bled yet? And I
Jesus
was like,
Christ, Felix.
I was like, you're a fucking sick, like, fuck you.
Yeah,
and
then
the next day, and I texted him, I was like, false alarm, I'm not quitting.
This is the thing though, like, because I don't mean this with any disrespect, actually, I mean, the opposite. No disrespect.
Yeah.
Actually, the opposite. Because I feel like there's this rhetoric from women where it's like, oh, men just need to shut up because you don't understand what the experience of a woman is. It's like, I think once you're an adult as a man and you've been around women enough, we get it.
Yes.
Because you broads don't fucking shut up.
We're just yak.
But it is, like, I think all jokes aside, like, it is in the mainstream now, like yes. It is like this was always the issue that it wasn't talked about, yes. And women's health wasn't taken seriously, all this stuff. And I think now, at least for me, when like if one of our friends, one of our female friends, was like, "Oh, Ryan, you just don't get it because you're a man," it's like, "No, I think I do because like I listen."
Yes.
So you need to have that allowance for it to be like,
yes, I'm grateful that like the men close to me, depending on how I'm reacting, they're like, Meg is out of whack at the
Meg
moment.
Meg needs a little chalky.
And I do every time. Yeah, I'm so grateful. But if it's like a random guy who's like, have you got your period or what?
Oh, you don't want to have that. Yeah.
I'm like, I will fucking kill you. Yes, I have my period, but I will kill you.
Yeah. I was hoping we could use this for a clip, but the lights have gone out now.
Drats.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, no, keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel like, men who are on heroin, I relate to them.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're like, oh, you're a sellout. I'm like, God, I've been there, but just with my body.
Your body. So
releasing an egg or something.
That's you injecting.
That's me injecting, yeah.
Fuck you.
But like without the euphoria.
No euphoria.
No euphoria. It's just like, I feel like when I'm in the luteal phase, I'm like coming down from a heroin injection.
Jesus Christ.
I'm experiencing all the lows.
None of the highs.
None of the highs. Like the anger.
Sounds really
resentment.
Different to heroin, I'll be honest with you.
I was just trying to relate to them, Ryan. I was just trying to meet them halfway.
Trying to relate to these angry white men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like we're not that dissimilar.
Did this feel like, because this is one thing, like Eden McGovern and Beck Charwood, who've both done episodes, they were like, why? Well, actually, Beckchild, the band we talked about was Agnostic Front, and they were actually pretty racially diverse.
Mm.
But Eden was like, why are these white men so mad? Did that strike you on this, or does it feel kind of...
No, it didn't, because I think I liked, you know, there were some songs that were like politically charged, and I'm like, I love when white men get political.
When it's more societal and less like, oh, I've got a prison inside my mind. Like when it's more cultural and societal, like
that's
it feels,
I'm like, finally, you guys are talking about
feels
it.
A bit more valid. Hey,
yes.
Definitely.
And then also, he did this song. they're a band. Which one was it? It was about, they mentioned killing themselves, and I was like,
oh, how much is enough to kill yourself?
How much is enough?
Yeah.
I'm like, this is relatable to everybody.
Yeah, what will it take? Well, give me an excuse.
Yeah. Yes. No, that didn't cross my mind. That probably speaks volumes about my internalized misogyny. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like the only thing standing between me and suicide is the third or fourth tier prestige TV show I'm watching on Stan.
Right.
After 9:30. Is that relatable? It's like, I'm watching Better Call Saul at the moment. It's really like keeping me going.
Yeah, similar. For me, it's things like treats. Like I feel like
treats are good. Treats like, are a reason to live.
Chocolate frappes with cream.
Oh, man.
They're like a suicide prevention to me.
Yeah, I don't indulge enough, but like when I do, fucking Starbucks. God is real.
Yeah.
God is real.
I'm like...
Starbucks go fucking ham on some of those drinks.
Like, ethically, I'm against Starbucks. Obviously, so against Starbucks. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. On days when I am like in a shitty mood, which is often, and I'm walking by one and I'm like...
She's just a bitch, guys. She's just such
I'm just a bitch. I'm a lover, etc. But I'm just like, God, I would fucking kill for a chocolate frappuccino right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as I imagine this is what heroin is like. As soon as I like take the first sip and it's got, you know, like the chocolate icicles and the cream, I'm like, oh my God. Like this is going to be fine.
There's the euphoria. So, and this is probably while you're on your period as well.
Yes.
So you get the euphoria from the chocolate frappe and then you get the come down from the the luteal phase.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, to me that is like the...
That's your heroin.
That's my heroin. Yeah. That's my suicide prevention. That's my TV show.
Yeah, you know? Nice. Fuck yeah.
I'm just like $5 away. Like on a day when I don't have $5, when I'm really feeling it, I'm like, that's the day I'm gone.
It's gone. It's happening.
Yeah.
Gonna jump off the story bridge.
Yeah, it's not hard.
But it's not hard to rectify, apparently.
Yeah.
There's always... So the message here, if we can give you some hopefulness to those listening, you may only be $5 away from killing yourself, but you're also only $5 away from loving life again.
Yes.
So there's hope, you know?
Yeah.
Everything
is equal.
And it's
so funny. Like, I literally have a great life, like great support network, you know, all my immediate
it's
family
members.
It's not
about that. It's not even about that.
It's literally not about that at all. Like, I'm so secure in my life, but I'm just like, no offense to my parents and everyone who loves me, but you are not as good as a chocolate frappe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true sometimes. Yeah. It's just in that moment. It's a very emotional thing. I understand. Yeah.
They're not powerful at all.
I feel like we're going full Red Scare mode right now.
Yeah.
You're Dasha and I'm Anna. I think.
I actually don't know what these words mean.
Oh, you don't? Yeah. You seem like a Red Scare girl. It's just a podcast. Yeah, you really do seem like a Red Scare. They love like Tradcath. They love all that stuff.
Okay, yeah. I must listen.
Yeah. Very, very funny pod. Anyway, sorry. To get back to Suffer, I'll give you some more details on it. So this is a quote from Laurent Barnard from Louder. And I think he is the guitarist in a punk band called Gallows, from what I read.
That's
on
a
the
great name.
It's a good name. Yeah, I saw them live. A long time ago, you're probably in primary school. I hate this fucking podcast. So he said, just to give you some context, Suffer was recorded over 10 days and it showcases the band's signature sound. I think what he's saying there is like what would become their signature sound. Because before this, like this is their third album and everyone's like, this is the turning point. So their signature sound. So it's extremely straightforward punk rock with buckets of melody, a direction that Bad Religion still thrive on almost 3 decades later. So it really is like the blueprint. And again, like I said before, not only for them, but for bands like The Offspring, for bands like Green Day, all that sort of stuff. Bad Religion, they're a resilient and influential group that helped codify... I love the way they describe this. Help codify a new punk rock sound for a new generation. I mean, that's from Stereogum, writer named Ryan Leas. I think it's weird, like looking back, and that's kind of the point of like getting you on for someone who's like totally unfamiliar with it, because for anyone listening to this today, it's like, oh, this is familiar. Like, I know this sound. Like what you said, it's like, oh, yeah, I know Green Day. I know these bands. I know what my brothers listen to.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the point is kind of like, at the time, it was such a signpost in musical history. And I think you don't realize that until years later, until everyone who like grew up with it is doing their own bands. And they're like, oh, no, the reason I do this is because of this single album.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's like parallels in comedy and stuff that you can see.
Yeah, definitely. You
know? Like I think the obvious one is like Louis C.K. Because like, you know, he was third world problems. or first world problems. Like that was a whole meme, but that was a Louis C.K. joke sort of thing. Right. And it just like really, and now like you see a lot of the crossover between stand-up comedy and like meme culture on the internet is like pretty, like the Venn diagram keeps getting closer and closer to a full circle.
Yeah.
And I think you can trace that back to like Louis just doing that because it's such a simple idea.
Yeah.
Like the premise was just, the premise itself was so funny that it was just applied to everything.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That he started that.
He was first world problems. Yeah.
I don't know if this is
What do you know about Louis C.K.? Let's get into it.
It's not good what I know.
What I know ain't great.
Yeah, that's literally all I know about him.
Yeah.
Is the band.
Really? That is like, I mean, a deserved shame.
Yeah.
I think that is the price you pay for being a creep. Because like he is, and I think these are two separate things. I don't really feel conflicted saying this. They're two siloed things. He is an amazing comedian and an amazing artist.
Yeah.
But you undermine that with your behavior.
Yeah.
Like that's just what happens. Like,
Yeah. Thankfully, like the male comedians that I like, you know, I would say formed my interest in comedy.
You love people like Chris D'Elia. You love people like, you know.
I thought you were being serious.
You're a big Bill Cosby girl.
Yes.
Like you love.
Oh my God. For a second, I thought you were being serious. And I was like, God, did my ex-boyfriend call up this? And I'm just call like, you up? And I was, because I know he liked Chris D'Elia. And I was like,
well, Meg, I got some bad news for you. What?
Yeah, no, I was so unproblematic. The first comedy stand-up set I ever watched was Ray Romano.
Oh, yeah.
And I was literally like 6 years old. And I was like, this is a funny. I even remember the joke. He had just become a father. And it was like something like Montreal or something. He just become a father and he gets on stage and he's like, I just became a dad and the audience wooed. And he's like, no, like I haven't been able to write some stuff because I've got this new baby.
Yeah.
And he's like, but you know what? Here's something my kid really likes. I'm just going to try it out. And he takes out car keys out of his pocket and he just he dangles it in front of his baby. And I was like 6 years old and I was like, this is everything.
I get it.
He had great
parenthood shit. I remember he had another one about his kids. If these kids don't want to do anything, like they turn into ninja assassins and like they just turn into like liquid and they won't move and he has to like drag them. It's like,
yeah. Oh, so
he's
funny.
Great. I love Ray Romano.
Yeah.
And unproblematic. Love it.
Unproblematic. But I would just love
until
something.
His John Mulaney story comes out. Yeah. The only safe comedian. Oh, fuck.
I would love something to come out about him, though, that, like, I don't know, on an off day, he was, like, really rude to a waiter.
Yeah.
Because like, I just know his reaction will be, like he'll just be, like, really disheveled and he won't remember it. But he'll just be, like, sort of fumbling about it.
Yeah.
But, like, that's the worst thing I want to come out about Ray Romano.
Yeah, he yelled at a PA.
Yeah, but like accidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah,
accidentally. Yeah, totally. That's so funny.
Yes.
So I think what's relatable about it is like, yeah, in all sort of subcultures, you do have these like artistic fucking crossroads, I think. Yeah, that you look back on, you're like, oh, that's where it happened.
Yeah.
That's where it happened. And I think Ray Romano is another good one because I think his sitcom was partly that.
Yeah.
You know, because like you had all these sitcoms where you had like the fucking frumpy dude with the really hot wife and like Ray, Everybody Loves Raymond was just like this middle class, like it was so real.
Yeah.
It felt really real. It didn't feel like a sitcom, but it was still hilarious.
Yeah. And having like highly neurotic parents. Yeah. But you have to talk to them like they're real people.
Yeah. Just having to deal with having
so
to manage
relatable.
Your
yeah,
family.
Yeah.
And I think that changed a bit like how Seinfeld changed. I think that was maybe one of, I mean, there's so many, but like Everybody Loves Raymond is like almost like the next Seinfeld in terms of, you know, Seinfeld was young, 20 something, single people fucking.
Mm.
Then that's that same generation, however many years later. It's like, oh, now we live out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And I still got to deal with my fucking parents. Like,
because they helped me buy this goddamn house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, talking about that, like this is another quote from the same guy on Stereo Gum, Ryan Leis. Suffer, the album, it was beloved in what might be seen as a transitional era for punk rock music. Though Bad Religion would go on to greater commercial success, which we've talked about. Yeah, you look at Suffer as the genesis point for a whole lot of what was about to happen in the next decade in California. So skate punk, pop punk, it all started here.
Wow.
And it just like it was just like getting on the water slide, I think. Yeah.
That is awesome.
I think what's funny though is like there's some stuff about when they were touring the album, which was like they were just that. So there was this great album. Everyone in California, everyone on the coast, I think, loved it because they played these sold out shows in New York. Mm. But Middle America had no fucking idea.
Right.
Yeah. So like I said, they had this guitarist, like their second guitarist played in a band called the Circle Jerks, who were just like a big, they were well known. So when they toured Middle America, all of the promo was Bad Religion featuring Greg Hetson on guitar.
Right.
Even though he was just a member of the band, that's how they had to get people out to the shows.
Yeah.
And they had this amazing seminal album, but they were playing to like 8 people in the middle of the country. So at the time they were like, oh shit. Like we're playing sold out shows in California, fine, but like we're not making any money off this. Like like they racked up $3,000 in debt because of hotel rooms and stuff like that. So at the time they were just like, oh, what? Okay.
Yeah.
They loved it.
I love hearing stuff like that though, because I think comedy and music is so different. But yeah, hearing stuff like that, I'm like, God, they're just like us for real.
He just like me.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about the lyrics because you said some of your favorite songs, but like before we do, I think the last bit of history I just want to give because I think it's important just for the time period, like that late 80s. And this is from their biography. They have a biography called Do What You Want, co-written by the band and this guy Jim Ruland. And this is the quote. So this is after their second record. Everyone fucking hated it before they released Suffer and kind of reignited the scene. So it's like it wasn't just that Bad Religion had been written off. Punk rock was at a low watermark and had been in a steady decline since the early 80s. The popularity of MTV had pushed punk deeper underground as young audience turned to punk influenced bands. So bands that sort of, I guess, like took that element, that edgy element of the culture, but like made it pop, I guess. I don't have any examples. I can't really think of any, but it was the 80s, so who cares?
Yeah.
But yeah, like the actual like true punk scene was kind of just maligned and just sort of like a very fringe society. So he goes on to say, fewer bands were making punk records, and those who did understood it wasn't a viable path to commercial success. But Suffer was about to change all that in a big way.
Wow.
It
is actually so cool.
It's pretty cool. And I relate to that. I mean, like, I think that's the whole thing. Like, when I was in punk bands, it's like, I feel like I've said this a lot, I'm probably on every episode, but like there was never any preconception of like, oh, we're doing this to make money.
Yeah.
Like to our earlier conversation, I was doing this to not kill myself.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't feel like a choice. It was like, I just need to express myself. So like the fact that it wasn't a viable pathway to commercial success never really entered my mind. But I think the reason like he wrote that is because in the 90s there was what they call the major label feeding frenzy.
Right.
Which was, you know, they got signed to Atlantic. Atlantic signed so many like punk and hardcore bands. And it was just like, oh, we can sell this to MTV. We can sell this to the kids.
Yeah.
Kids are buying skateboards. Kids will buy these records.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And that's also part of how Bad Religion marketed themselves as well. They like gave out records with Thrasher Mag and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how they like reached people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but so you said you had a few favorite songs.
Yes.
You said Do What You Want
mm-hmm.
was one of your favorite songs. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really funny as an intellectual because
thank you.
It was an interpretation of Nietzsche.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. That makes sense.
So Brett Gerowitz wrote this one, the guitarist, not the vocalist, Greg Graffin.
Yeah.
What we got? Fuck. So yeah, it was basically an interpretation of part of Nietzsche's philosophy about like, what was it? The will, I forget what it was called. I think the will to freedom or the will to act is neither inherently good or bad.
Yeah.
But when it's used by fascists, that's when it becomes. So it's like everyone has this will to do what they want. But then like, I think the interpretation from Bad Religion was just like, no, do what you want. Let's go for a skate. Do what you want.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's like, There is definitely a Nietzsche kind of reference in it, because in the chorus is he says, "Go to hell with Superman," which is the Übermensch.
Mm.
You know, like Superman was a Nietzschean kind of idea.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't tell. That's the thing with a lot of these lyrics. I can't tell if they're like tongue in cheek or facetious, or if they're like to be taken at face value. And I think it's kind of a blend of the two.
Yeah. My interpretation of it, my little knowledge about, you know, punk music and stuff. What I like about it, I believe that it's like, you know, applying all this stuff, all this knowledge they have about like Nietzsche, philosophy, society.
Yeah.
But the underlying message is like, none of this is real, you guys.
I love it. It's not real.
None of this is real. You can actually do whatever you want.
Yeah. I would believe that because you've got two guys. So Brett Gerowitz, who was a heroin addict.
Yeah.
I think that philosophy would really... A Nietzsche-obsessed heroin addict.
Yes.
And then, but the singer, Greg Graffin, is an evolutionary biologist.
Really?
He's like a well-regarded academic.
Oh my God, that's
as well as being
awesome.
The singer and one of the biggest.
Wow.
So yeah, that's like very anti-God, pro-evolution.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Is there any like Darwin-esque lyrics?
There is. I wanted to as a teacher, I wanted to get your viewpoint on them, because like some of the lyrics are like just the thesaurus open.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I just to finish off on this one though, because like, I love this lyric, or this verse. I'll do the verse. "Hey, I don't know if the billions will survive, but I'll believe in God when one and one are five."
Right.
Pretty sticking it to them.
Yeah.
Because one and one are two.
Yeah.
"My moniker is man and I'm rotten to the core. I'll tear down the building just to pass through the door." And that's kind of where I'm like the blurred lines between like it being earnest and it being sarcastic, because it's like that is kind of anti-authoritarian. Like, if you're not going to let me in, I'm going to tear down the whole fucking system.
Yeah.
But it also seems like written from the point of view of a fascist or someone who wants to like oppress other people as well. So it's kind of like this double meaning. Like, yeah. I can't quite penetrate it, but it's like... But maybe that's just as good. Like, it's he's from his point of view, this makes sense. But also from the point of view of like, yeah, fascism, it also has a deeper meaning. Like,
yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I listened to this last night, and my first, like the whole album, my first takeaway was like, I appreciate how sonically cohesive
it's super,
the whole album is.
It's really good. He recorded, like the Brett Gerowitz, he recorded it.
Wow.
That was part of his rehab in the 80s after his first kind of addiction bout. He was like, "Oh, what am I going to do?" He went and got did whatever the American version of a TAFE course is to become a recording engineer.
Oh, that's awesome.
And now he's one of, again, like you've got Greg Graffin, who's one of the best regarded academics. This guy not only is a great guitarist, great songwriter, runs a record label, he also records a lot of the bands on that fucking record label.
Wow. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can tell. There's like so much science to it. I wish I like appreciated the lyrics more, because I think with like punk music and, you know, rock music and stuff, there is such an emphasis on the lyrics, because it's very clever. Yeah. It's very cerebral.
I think it started with that's kind of what I wanted to bring up. I think it started with these guys.
Right.
Maybe not started, but these guys really like ran with it.
Yeah.
Because I got another quote from the singer, from Greg Graffin. "I was starting graduate school and I didn't want to be putting out songs that didn't have some intellectual merit.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to have some meat. That started the tradition that most people came to know as Bad Religion. Mixing the style of music with themes of intellectual and philosophical inquiry defined the course of my life."
Wow.
Yeah. So I think before then, like, you listen to Minor Threat or you listen to Bad Religion, it's like, life sucks. Like, in the words of the great Beck Charwood, punch the president in the face. Like, you know, like, it's just like, I'm in a prison of my own mind. Mm-hmm. Like, and these guys are writing about fucking Nietzsche.
Yeah.
And just... like, that's just such a about face for punk rock.
Yeah.
And it became this thing. I think like, not to malign those early lyrics, because it is definitely like a fucking outpour. It's an emotional outpouring still. It's just not very, there's not a lot of like kind of intellectual interrogation. It's just like, I feel this, me say this now, like thing, which I enjoy. Like, just that pure raw emotion is great. But then also something a bit more artistic or thought through is always a bit more rewarding, I guess.
Yeah.
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 So these are the lyrics I wanted to run by you. Okay. And like you can put your teacher hat on here and like, because these ones I think are pretty fucking funny.
Okay.
as great as this band is, as great as this record is, this one I was like listening to it, and I'm like, what the fuck is he saying? And I brought up the lyrics on Spotify and I was like, what are you talking about? So this is the song. I think this is the second track. It's 1,000 More Fools. Mm-hmm. 1,000 More Fools, which is seems like a treatise against Christianity, basically. Right. So I'll start with the first verse because it goes hard from the get-go. I heard them say that the meek shall reign on earth. Phantasmal myriads of sane bucolic birth.
Right.
Right. Phantasmal myriads of sane bucolic birth.
I don't know what bucolic means.
I don't know what any of those words mean. Phantasmal is like ghostly, right?
Right.
Like a phantasm.
Say again.
Phantasmal myriads of sane bucolic birth.
Birth in...
I know what birth means.
Christianity, yeah. But like in the Christianity context, birth will always, in my experience, be referring to like the birth of Jesus, the birth of like forgiveness, sure. New life.
Phantasmal mirrors of same bucolic. Maybe he's talking about Jesus. I don't know maybe. What bucolic means.
I don't know what bucolic means.
Should we look up what bucolic means? Like yeah. live on air?
It sounds like close to colon.
It does. I thought
like
the same
colonic.
Thing. Or I was thinking like the opposite.
Right.
So like poo comes out colonic, bucolic might be vomit. Relating to the pleasant aspects of the countryside and country life. The church is lovely for its bucolic setting.
Right.
Bucolic birth.
Bucolic birth.
Okay. Fantastic. That still makes, it clears up nothing.
You know, going off, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth.
Yeah.
We know what that means. Nice people yeah. will get the world.
Well, maybe the next two lines will explain it. I've seen the rapture. In a starving baby's eyes. Inchoate beatitude, the Lord of the Flies.
That took a turn.
The Lord of the Flies.
Seeing the rapture. Oh, well, that kind of makes sense. Seeing the rapture in the eyes of like new life.
But it's a starving baby.
A starving baby.
Is it saying like Christianity doesn't care about people in the third world dying from hunger?
Perhaps.
But because they're going to go to heaven.
And then maybe like comparing that to like Lord of the Flies. It's like all those boys trapped on the island.
Boys, boys, boys.
Boys, boys, boys.
Dude Island.
And maybe like the Western world, we're Lord of the Flies.
We are a little bit Lord of the Flies.
We are. We're so
very
Lord
indulgent.
Of the Flies. Yeah, very indulgent.
Yeah.
Every man for themselves.
Manifest destiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is what I mean. Like, this feels like Greg Graffin having the thesaurus open next to him, being like,
yeah.
So, okay. What would you give this? What would you give this?
I am like...
If you were like, write a poem, kids.
Yeah.
And little Greg Graffin came in with 1,000 More Fools.
Something I say to my students is like, having an expansive vocabulary should actually help you say less and not more.
Sure. Yeah.
Because when you know like an excellent adjective or superlative or whatever, you should be able to say three things with one word. So I would deduct points because he's used more flowery language.
Yeah.
And has not simplified what he's saying. Because I'm still like, what say you?
So what do you mean?
Yeah. What do you mean?
What do you mean, Greggy?
I think, you know, poetically, he's pulling it off though.
Yeah. Poetic. Yeah. Yeah. So from a purely... aesthetic
yes.
point of view, it does the job.
Yes.
That's important too.
And I think, you know, there are still like, you know, that the motifs of like, there is the motifs of, you know, the religiosity of it,
yeah,
if
sure.
you will.
Yeah. The bad religiosity.
The bad religiosity of it. You know, the fall of man, and man is religion. God is not religion, man is.
Interesting.
Yeah, God didn't create religion, we did.
That reminds me of another quote. Might seem unrelated, but race is the child of racism.
Mm-hmm.
Racism came first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we decided to define race.
Yeah.
So man came first and he created God.
Yes.
To make sense of things.
I love that. I think every origin story reflects that as well. Like even Greek mythology, it was said that...
Oh, war? We have war? Oh, there must be something making war. It couldn't be us.
It couldn't be,
be us.
Yes. Yeah, every origin story reflects that. Like, do you know the story? Who was he? The guy who was not Sisyphus.
Narcissus?
Not Narcissus. Literally the guy who was...
Aristotle.
No. He was really good friends with Zeus. He like created us and he gave us fire.
Oh, starts with a P.
Yes. So him.
God of fire.
He stole fire from the gods.
And then he was chained to the thing and a vulture pecked out his liver.
Yes. What's his name? Do you know
the name of the... I forget his name.
I forget his name too. He was the god of foresight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the story goes that he, like when there were just gods in the world, Zeus was like, I want like versions of us.
Yeah.
But without the godly abilities. Like I want more people to fuck is what he was saying.
Yeah.
Who aren't powerful.
I want to turn into a swan.
Yes. And apparently he made, what is his name?
Zeus in fucking Olympus being like, you know what bitches love? Bitches love swans.
Bitches love swans.
So I'm going to be a swan.
I'm going to be like a swan. Yes.
Like a Cat Williams bit.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, apparently this god just made all of us.
Yeah.
But like he made like a purple version, a green version.
Yeah, sure.
You know, black, brown, white. And then like he laid them all out before they had life in them and like by the river and Zeus and Athena came and were like, oh my God, they're beautiful. And Zeus accidentally like tripped on the green, purple, blue version. And that's why there's only like white, black and brown versions of us. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I cannot remember his name for the life of me. What is it?
It's something. I'll tell you that.
I'm literally looking.
It's not Pythagoras. I'm thinking Pythagoras.
It's not Pythagoras. I'm gonna.
But we know
so
the
annoyed.
Myth, and that's more important.
Yes.
Yeah.
God of foresight.
God of foresight.
What's his name? What's his name? It's coming.
It's coming.
No.
Nothing.
Oh, Prometheus.
Prometheus.
You're right. Starts with P.
The alien movie.
Yep. Exactly.
It was Prometheus.
It was Prometheus.
Do you think I've successfully told you the story of this record and this band?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There was.
Do you have a deeper appreciation for what your brothers were showing you when
yes,
you were a kid?
Yes, I do. I do. I thought they were just like angry guys.
Yeah.
TBH. But yeah.
Well, they are. I think they are.
I think they are too.
But they're also evolutionary biologists, I guess.
Yeah. It does make me appreciate it because, like, you know, when I found my own type of music I was interested in, it was like, you know, like female singer-songwriters going through their feelings, which I think definitely has a place in this world. And I love, you know, words to what
I don't think
I'm
they
feeling.
Should be allowed to drive, but they can play music.
Exactly. But this, I think I didn't know until like years later, this type of music was like, you know, making young people politically informed.
Yeah, it really was. And like I said, I think I was messaging you. Like, I knew the hits, like the Bad Religion hits, but I never really engaged with them as a band. Kind of partly because like it felt a bit boring. I think after a band's been going for however many decades, I'm like, it's too hard. It's like, like trying to get into a show that's been running for four seasons or something. And I kind of regret that now because like, these early records are so fucking good. Mm. But yeah, the bands that were I was influenced by the bands that were influenced by them.
Yeah.
Especially politically. Like I was talking about Goldfinger earlier and stuff. It's like caring about politics without having to watch the news.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They're like the original friendly Geordies, but with music.
And I think it is. It is. I think like the other thing is like when kind of what you were saying before about like this like angry white man thing is like I grew up in the suburbs.
Mm.
My parents are still together, you know, like. But you become a teenager and you just are angry. It's the hormones.
Yeah.
But I think it's this real thing. And maybe we've lost a bit of the nuance now, but it is this thing. It's like, well, what are you fucking angry about?
Yeah.
And that's what I ask myself all the time. And bands like this specifically, bands that were talking about shit in the world, even if it wasn't like the smartest take or anything like that, it was like, oh no, the world does kind of suck. I do have a reason to be angry, but I can direct that anger into art, into stuff I want to talk about and make it somewhat fucking productive.
Yes.
Rather than just being like, fucking girls are bitches, like, you know, like rather than this incel stuff that's happening today.
Yes, I was gonna say that. Yeah, it's not incel stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and I think like, I'm probably biased because I'm their sister, but like, my brothers have every reason to be incels, I think, but they're not.
They are disgusting. They're I don't know how they turned out so nice.
I don't know how. Yeah. But like, yeah, I remember my brothers were like talking about why they hate George W. Bush.
Sure. Exactly. Is that that exact thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I mean, like, no effects. We mentioned
14, 16, that kind of age.
Yeah. No effects. Or like who we mentioned before, they had the, I don't know if you ever saw this shirt. They had the photo of George W. Bush with Not My President.
Yes.
That was them. That was, it might've been the record label, but it was, yeah, it was Fat Mike. No effects. Yeah. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So all these like cultural kind of, well, yeah, memes essentially, like,
yeah,
they, you know, you got like the, our origins are like kind of cool sometimes, you know, like Louis C.K. with the third world problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. And No Effects with the Not My President stuff is, yeah, has far reaching kind of like tentacles. Like,
yeah. That makes me want to know like the origin of everything I say and do.
Yeah, yeah, the etymology. Yeah,
I just assume things appear and then they become mine.
I think that's okay. I think that's the way memes work in 2023, so that's fine.
Yeah. Like, I want to know, because I can't stop saying this, I want to know the origin of, like, you know when someone's like, oh, yeah, I went to a party the other week, and you're like, my phone must be broken. Because I say that all the time. Like, it is, I have a pathological issue with saying that.
But I was saying that, like, when I was your age as well. Yeah. Like, I was saying that to my friends as a joke. It's like, oh, well, I guess, you know.
My phone must be broken.
I guess the text didn't come through, like, whatever it was.
Like, I want to know.
It's from a show. It must be from a show. It's from Everybody Who Loves Raymond, I bet.
No doubt.
It comes
but
full
I
circle.
Know it's like such a boomer thing to say. And I say it so much. Like I said it yesterday. And Ben Hunter, our friend Ben Hunter, he was like, I will actually break your fucking phone if you keep saying that.
It's funny.
It's so funny.
It's a funny thing to say. It's boomers hilarious. Are funny.
They're hilarious.
Boomers say the funniest shit.
Yeah. Another thing they say is, oh, must be nice.
Must be nice.
Must be nice. Oh, like, oh, I went to lunch. Oh, must be nice.
Must be nice.
To go to lunch midday.
That's, yeah, and that's where the avocado on toast shit comes from. It's like, oh, you're too busy buying avocado. That is a very funny thing to say.
It's hilarious.
It's so funny.
It's so passive aggressive.
And they're also correct. Like, brunches are fucking expensive.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And it's like, it's also like, it's passive aggressive, but it's so polite. Like to say,
I would rather have a nice brunch than have a house, to be honest.
Yeah. God, me too. I'd rather have a frappe, back to the frappe than a house. I would rather have, a house is maintenance. God, exactly.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
So I made this palatable for you.
Yes.
Nice. I'm glad. I'm glad.
Yes. It's so many layers.
There's a lot of layers to it, yeah. And I appreciate you letting me just talk about punk rock.
I love, like, but it's so much fun when people, like, nerd out about things that they actually know a lot about.
This is my special interest podcast. Yes. Absolutely. This is my outlet.
Because it's so cool because it's like, oh, I do this, but about something I think nobody cares about.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, oh, this is universal. Like, everybody has their little thing.
There are, it relates to, if you care about any sort of art, like, these stories are pretty universal. Like,
yes.
Yeah. My thing is, like with these, like, past few episodes, I do think, like, deep down, I think it's, like, slightly less interesting to talk about the actual physical history of the band and the physical history of the making of the record as opposed to what it meant to people and what it meant to me in my life and stuff. But like with these really early ones, some of them I don't have like a deep personal connection with.
Yeah.
So it does have to, I feel like it might've been a little bit dry or whatever, but like there is like a, there's a story there. Mm. There is a story there of these guys that were like real dudes like going through this fucking 40 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Oh my God. The 80s was 40 years ago.
83 was 40 years ago.
Yeah. Cause
and they were already a band for 3 years in 83.
Oh yeah. My brother turned 40 this year cause he was born in 1983. That's so funny. Yeah.
So these guys are still playing shows. They're like 60. Yeah, they're close, like around 60, basically.
Yeah,
still doing
must be nice.
Must be nice. Meg, thank you so much for doing this. Did you have anything to add? Any final thoughts or have we covered it?
I think we did cover it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. I appreciate you talking about your religious upbringing and all that stuff. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Follow Meg. Is it Meg Yeager on?
Yeah, yeah. Literally my name.
That's Yeager with a J. You'll see it in the description. You'll see it. Yeah.
MegJager, because I'm the only Meg Yeager in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if that's untrue, we're gonna kill the other ones.
I will actually do that.
I know you will.
I don't care. It's only me.
Munchausen by proxy on the other Meg Yeagers.
There's allowed to be like Margaret Yeagers or Megan Yeagers, but I'm the only Meg Yeager.
And yeah, as always, follow Dead Ramones. We're just dead_Ramones on Instagram. Follow me, ryan.d.sim. Come to Rat Club Comedy. I'm not sure when this episode's coming out, but we are back for 2024 on January 8th with our New Year's Day show.
What, really?
On January 8th, New Year's Day.
Oh, January 8th.
Greek New Year's, I'm calling it.
Greek New Year's. Yeah. Cool. I'll write that down.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're in Sydney, come to Rat Club. If you're anywhere else in the country, go see Meg at the festivals.
Yeah, I live everywhere in Australia.
She does. She's a traveling comedian now. She's a national. She's a national comic.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much, Meg.
Of course. Thank you, everybody in the world.